From Migration Media, this is Migratory Patterns. I'm your host, Mike Shaw. While the small town in Michigan where she grew up is the place that she goes back to whenever she needs a safe haven, Elena Miller doesn't really think of it as home anymore. Not since she set off for school in Chicago, and especially not since she spent the last year studying abroad as part of the Ricci Scholars Program at Loyola College. What's driven her constant shifts to bigger and newer locales has been the vastly different and different ways of thinking that she's encountered at every step of her journey. She went off to college knowing that she wanted to travel internationally and saw the Ricci Scholars Program's destinations of Rome and Beijing as a natural evolution, with each stop being a jumping off point to something even more foreign. Her project to study migrant housing has opened her eyes to a world of possibilities, and it's incredibly fulfilling. But she realizes that she's starting to move outside of the experience of her traditional group of friends, and that she may find herself facing the same challenge that many who have spent time overseas face, discovering that they need to connect with different kinds of people than they did before they left. This is another great conversation, and it has been incredibly inspiring to spend time with these Ricci scholars. Knowing that some of our best and brightest minds are reaching outside of their home cultures to try to promote understanding across borders gives me great hope for the future in these troubling times. And they make me even more determined than ever to maintain a platform for them to share their experiences insight. So let's get to it. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my conversation with Elena Miller. Elena Miller, welcome to Migratory Patterns.
Thank you for having me here.
Where is home?
Home for me, I grew up in a small town right outside Ann Arbor, Michigan. So, tiny little town. When people ask where's home, that's kind of where I think of first, because I grew up in a nice family in a little town. Never really got outside that bubble until moved off to college. For now, home though is kind of anywhere I am at the point. I don't really think of that as my home. I have always seen myself moving around, being abroad, being traveling all over the world. So right now I will tell people that because that's where I go back to when I need a little safe haven, but I have moved all over and I don't really identify with a single place right now.
I would say your idea of home probably isn't even quite determined yet. It sounds like you kind of go back to what you thought of as home, and it hasn't caught up with what you're doing now yet.
I do. That's exactly true. I'm still kind of figuring out where I want to be or if I even ever want to settle in one place for the rest of my life. It's kind of, I've always seen myself traveling around, so.
Well, I'll tell you, just as someone who's been traveling for a while or has been living overseas for a while, that kind of figuring out what home means doesn't really go away.
Yeah.
Like I think we were talking earlier and I even referred to, quote, going home when I was talking about going to Boston.
You always have to refer to it in quotes. It's yeah. The only way to talk about it.
Well, but even then, sometimes I forget to add quotes. Like I catch myself afterwards.
Right.
So that whole feeling of, well, if I talk about visiting home, I'm talking about going to Boston, but really I can't live there anymore and I can't go back there and I wouldn't feel comfortable, but what is
home?
Where am
I? Do we
I?
Need to define it?
Yeah. So this is something that's going to be happening in a while. But I like to hear you're kind of in the middle of that thought process because you are new to living overseas. And before we get to where you are now, let's talk about how you got from the place you started. So the little town outside Ann Arbor, There's a pretty big university there. Why did you go outside of there for university?
Well, most of my high school goes to the high school with a plan to move to U of M then. So everyone's like, oh, did you apply to University of Michigan? And I'm almost proud to say, no, I did not. I always knew I wanted to get out of the bubble of little Chelsea, Michigan, outside of Ann Arbor. I mean, town of 5,000. Everyone, we grew up in the college town, basically. So I knew from the beginning I wanted to be out. I've always been very independent. So I was looking around and I'm like, where's somewhere where I'm not too far away, like a good transition spot, but will give me this outside feeling. And that ended up being Chicago. So I moved, went to school, Loyola University, Chicago, and I loved it. It was the best move I've ever made.
What were the differences that you experienced between your small town in Chicago, besides just the scale? Like, what was the feeling
Countless.
Like?
Yeah. I mean, for me, it was my first real step outside. I mean, I've traveled internationally before. It wasn't like this was the first time I've ever left my small town, but like moving to Chicago on my own, I finally felt independent and I finally felt like I had been exposed to real levels of diversity and just different types of people and different ways of thinking that I'd never really gotten access to before. And it's finally an opportunity for me to really see what I believe and like what I think about things and experience the world without the filter of the safe home feeling. Mm.
So you mentioned, you kind of mentioned before that the other people in your school were mostly looking to go to U of M. Mm-hmm. And is that what happened? Did most of them stay local?
A lot, yes. A lot of kids go to U of M or Michigan State University, which is up a little ways north. Most of my friends are in that area still, like my good high school friends. My best friend from high school is at U of M. So, I mean, I'm back there all the time to visit, but that's all I really need of it. I did not want to follow that typical pattern.
Yeah. So now you're here in Beijing and you're part of this program that we're exploring these weeks. And this is, remind me the name of it again?
It's called the Ricci Scholars Program.
Ricci Scholars Program. Yeah. And this has sent you, if I remember correctly, you spent time in Italy and now you're in Beijing.
That's
you're in
correct.
Rome, right?
In Rome, yes.
So what have you been, what has your experience been like going from Chicago to Rome and then to Beijing? What are the differences and the problems and good things that you've seen?
Sure. So for me personally, it's easy for me to look back and see how I've changed in each of these steps. So high school, Elena was very reserved, very happy in her own little space, but knew she wanted more. And then I go to Chicago and I get all this great experience, but I still felt like it wasn't quite enough. Like I still wanted to do more. So I went to school knowing I wanted to travel internationally. So this was the next step, allowing me to get out of that. And so moving to Rome, even the Europe and then Asia transition, like it's all been a development setup. So Europe was a good transition area. Italy was a good transition country to be in because it's similar enough, you know, Western ideologies in a lot of ways.
But it's the marijuana of living overseas.
Yeah, the gateway drug, exactly. I mean, I liked it. I really enjoyed my time in Europe, but I think that was mostly because I could travel around so much while I was there. The ease of travel there was incredible, and so I really got to explore that side of my personality and that, like, just the total independence that I felt there, too. Like, finally, completely on my own, you know, thousands of miles from my family. So that was great, but yeah, Rome itself.
And good pasta.
Great pasta. I've gained a few there, but I enjoyed my time in Rome, but it's not my favorite city. And I don't know, I may go back to visit, but I would never go live there again. Mm.
And then you moved on to Beijing. Good pasta here too. They just call it noodles.
They call it noodles, a different type of pasta, but the difference is I would move here. I love Beijing. I really love my time. It's completely different than Rome or Chicago, anything I've ever really been in before. But I just found that I love living in a place that's so different from anything I've ever known before.
You said that from an early age, even in high school, you wanted to live overseas. Mm-hmm. Do you have any idea where that came from?
When I was in eighth grade, I did a small, like, 10-day exchange program where I went to Japan for a little bit. So this is not actually my first time in Asia. But I went on this Japan exchange because I had a friend who's like, hey, do you want to do this? I'm like, yeah, okay, sure. So I did it, had a great time. My family took a big trip to Uganda when I was in high school then. And so that gave me just little tastes of being international. And then
the first hit's always free.
It's a gateway. And here I'm spiraling now. But
you're spiraling. You need your fix.
I don't know what I need, but but yeah, so it was those two things kind of sparked it. And my family always took us on like vacations around the US then. So I've always been one to keep myself extremely busy too. And so I need the constant like in feed of sense, like everything around me. I love just always having something to do, new things to see. And so what better way to do that than live abroad where every single thing is different and it's new and you have to find different ways to adjust. And that's just the environment that I thrive in. So
I feel like I've actually talked to several people who have come from their small towns. Like, I find it kind of fascinating that I run into so many people from tiny towns, mm-hmm. whether it's a tiny town in Siberia, to a tiny town in Romania, to a tiny town in Florida, tiny town in Michigan, and they are the one mutant from that small area, the mutated gene. It's like the one so person.
True. I'm the mutated gene in my own family, too. I mean, my parents have always grown up in small towns, and they are so happy to just live in their little community here. I have two siblings, younger and older, and they're both homebodies, like to stay close to home. I mean, they've done their fair share of traveling as well, but they're comfortable just settling and living down. And I have never been like that. My dad has always said to me, he goes, I don't know what happened, but you're the odd one in the family, but we still love you. But I've always been proud to be that person. I love having this sense of adventure and travel, and I love pursuing it.
That's great. You know, I find that about myself as well. I really relate to that. Like, I won't go into the whole story. I've told it before on previous podcasts. I'll put a link in the show notes. But my family has been rooted in one place in Boston for, 150 or more years. But the person, the progenitors of the family who came over from both sides, both arrived around the same time from basically different countries, one from the American South just before the Civil War, one from Ireland. And even back further than that, the progenitor of one side of the family came over to the U.S. from England, and wasn't even the U.S., it was in the 1640s. So like, there's this weird, if you look through my family timeline, my family history, there's this weird every seven generations or so, this weird mutation where some person just goes up, goes somewhere crazy and does some god-awful fool thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm that guy because I have no idea why I moved overseas. I never thought I would.
Best thing you've ever done, though, right?
Best thing I've ever done. I mean, really, I can't. I'm so proud of who I am since I've come overseas. Not that I wasn't proud of myself before, but there's this part of me I didn't know was in there.
Exactly. I feel the exact same way. I just feel, I can see the complete flip in my personality moving abroad, and I can see how my perspectives and ideas have just been vastly opened after just living in these places. And I go home. This is why I'm so sad to leave in a week or two, just because I go home and I just know how people think there, and I think of the university, and I'm just like, oh, we're going back into this sort of bubble of America and everything. And I just like, I feel like everyone you meet out here too has the same open-minded perspective and has had these experiences, and that's...
Yeah, you kind of have to be. This is one of the great things about living in this international migrant / expat culture, is that everyone that you interact with here who's also a foreigner is going through the same thing you are, and they're trying to make connections just like you are. So right. Everyone's got this certain level of openness.
It is. It's like this community attracts the oddballs of the family. And so that's why they come in here.
Well, what's interesting, I'm kind of fascinated. I'll have to follow up with you because I'm interested when you go back, you start hanging out with the international students more.
I honestly think I might. I don't know how I could go back to the same circles. I mean, obviously keep my good friends, but I definitely want to look for the broader communities there now.
Yeah. And the world isn't going anywhere, so there's plenty of opportunity for you to move back.
There's so much more. I'd love to.
I want to hear more about what you've been doing in this program, the Ricci program.
Yes, that's right.
I want to hear more about this, but let's take a quick break. You can have a glass of water. I'll take a breath, and we'll come right back.
Sounds good.
Hi everyone, want to hear more about the migrant lifestyle? I'm Michelle Ibarra, and I want to give you the tools to live your best life overseas over at my podcast, Pop Abroad. Season 1 is all about global communities and the people who have created and nurtured them. Pop Abroad is also part of the Migration Media Network. You can find Pop Abroad at migrationmedia.net or wherever you find your podcasts.
All right, and we're back. So let's talk about what you've been experiencing in this Ricci program. So this is, if I remember correctly, international scholars who do study overseas, but it's not like a language exchange. Can you please explain how this works?
Sure. So it's junior year of college. We're sent abroad, basically thrown into Rome and Beijing. But each of us, it's a pretty small program, usually only 6 to 8 kids in it. But we apply, we form our own research proposals that we submit, and then it goes through some processes, and then we go through some interviews, and if we're accepted, then we're sent abroad. So my project specifically is about the affordability and availability of migrant housing. Obviously, international migration is a huge thing. So I study international relations and business. So this was kind of connected to my major, and I just wanted to really explore this big problem that many people, you don't really think about the housing situation or like real estate necessarily connected outside of these other countries. So this program was just an opportunity for me to explore something that I'm interested in, but also take me abroad for a whole year, which is, it's combining a bunch of passions in one, which was perfect for me.
So before we get into the particulars, because my brain is going and I want to just dive into the stats and your research, but before we get into that, I'm curious, we touched on this before about your progression from place to place, and I'm wondering if, as you were traveling, if this was an affirmation of that, like when you got to each place, you're like, oh yeah, I definitely want to be overseas. Or was it more of a, you got overseas and you were like, whoa, this is what I want to do.
It's definitely an affirmation. Yeah. I mean, right before I left, I was like, I was in a great space. I had a good relationship. I was like, had a great summer with my friends. I'm like, do I really want to do this? And the minute I stepped off the plane, I'm like, yeah, this is where I want to be. And then just using this research to really immerse myself in the culture was definitely an affirmation to wanting to be abroad.
Have you thought about what that's going to mean for your relationships when you go back? Because these are people who will not have shared your experiences and won't be able to relate to them.
Sure. Yeah, I've thought a lot about this just because the friends I've made, I've gotten so close with while I've been abroad here, who have been with me for this whole year. I mean, obviously, I've Skype stayed in touch with friends back home, but
you can't, if you tell them about that amazing night out at the thing in Beijing, they're like, well, that sounds great.
They won't know. And so it's just my best friend from home, who we've been like as close as can be all through high school, all through the first 2 years of college. She just goes, I feel like I've missed out on so much of your life. Like, she used to know every detail of every day of my life. And now it's like we catch up every 3-4 weeks, but there's just so much. I don't think it's going to harm our friendship at all. It's just, I feel like there's a big part of it missing now that like either we're gonna have to talk for days to catch back up on, but yeah, it's not the same. But I think that's part of the whole experience too, and just being someone who moves around so much.
The analogy that I use is kind of like a boot camp. The people that I went through my first year or two overseas with, I really feel like we went through boot camp together. Like, yeah. I'm bonded with them for life.
Right.
It's something that like wherever they are in the world, I know I can crash with them and they know they're welcome with me wherever. There's, you know, one friend of mine who's been having some issues with her health. She's on social media in a little group of people who have all lived with her here in China. Mm-hmm. And she's back in her home country and we're all keeping up to date, and everyone is, there's people who's visiting her, there's people inviting her to visit, you know, there's just this bond that doesn't go away, and it is different from the people that I was friends with back home.
Oh, completely.
It's very totally different. And it's I'm interested in how that'll work for you, and maybe we can check back in a year,
sure,
or something.
Yeah, I couldn't even tell you at this point because I know I've changed so much in this past year. So I'm like, I go back, or the friends who I was friends with as that person, like, is it going to be the same when I go back? So yeah, I'll send you an email in a year and we'll see.
Or you can come on, we'll get you on the show again.
I'll come visit Beijing again. I'll be living here by that point.
And I'm in Bali, so.
Oh, it's, true. Yeah, yeah, you'll be Bali then.
But so let's circle back to your project, because my brain is churning with this. So when you're researching migrant housing?
Yes, that's correct.
So you went into, now when I think of migrant housing in Italy or Europe in general, I think of something very different than what I think of in China.
And you have to, it's completely different.
The migrant housing, I'm assuming, is about refugees and immigrants who are not of the culture, whereas the housing in China is more about urbanizing the culture, that the people of the country.
That's exactly spot on. So I had to adjust the research a little bit moving from place to place, but in Rome, it was all international migrants coming from Northern Africa, you know, Eastern Europe a little bit more. But yeah, huge refugee situation. I mean, the housing that I was looking at were basically like refugee camps or little,
like, reclaimed warehouses and stuff.
Yeah, like abandoned buildings, like migrant occupations as they were referred to. So illegal empty warehouses, exactly, that people have filled in. But then, I mean, the similarities, like both, in both places, there have just been massive evictions of these buildings because there have been crackdowns on and whatnot. But yeah, so in Rome, it was definitely all sort of illegal what you can, a shelter to sleep in was basically what I was seeing, where here it is like rural to urban migration. So native Chinese who are moving into the urban centers for work mostly.
Yeah. Is there government driven housing being built in that you saw in Rome?
In Rome?
For the migrant population?
Not really being built. No, the Italian government was not very welcoming for migrants. So there were tons of empty real estate buildings that were just unfilled, but the government, through the refugee processes and the legality of it all, the migrants did not have access to these buildings.
There's no effort to get them into these places. That
there are by, you know, like NGOs, like small groups, but no, nothing from the government to really accompany all these migrants coming in. I mean, the government is focused on keeping them out mostly in general. So, and they're getting huge numbers every year. So it is hard, granted, to accommodate all these people, but they have empty buildings, empty accommodations that could be used that just aren't being. Yeah.
And they're not actually trying to create a process that they could even handle the influx. It's more just how do we stop it?
Yeah. And while I was there, actually, during the time, they were passing new laws about like making it harder for them to stay, harder for even refugees to get refugee access and whatnot. So it's, they're really tightening the laws on it now. I mean, you're seeing this all across Europe too. Immigration is a huge issue there right now.
Yeah. Now, when we transition over to China, then the migration situation is very different. It's internal migration. Mm-hmm. Some of it's forced displacement. There are. It's not like a seamless thing where people are just flooding the cities. There's a lot of government directed stuff, exactly. But there's also it's complicated. But the physical reality is there are massive numbers of human beings moving from the countryside into urban centers. So what are the differences you've seen between what's happening in Italy vis-a-vis migrant housing and China?
So that's a good question. So I mean, a lot of the migrants going to Italy are obviously they're looking for asylum and looking for protection. Or with Rome, Rome was often like a gateway city. So they'd land in Italy off the Mediterranean and get their documents in Rome and then head off somewhere else into Europe. So a lot of the housing there was temporary, whereas here in China, people are coming and looking to start a whole new life in these Beijing, like the urban centers. And I mostly focus on Beijing as a city that I studied, but it is a lot more people picking up everything or leaving everything behind more like and moving to these cities to find a new life where they can hopefully better support themselves.
What's fascinating about China, which I know a little bit about because I'm here, what's fascinating about the migration situation, the internal migration situation in China, is that you've had people moving to these cities and the government actually doesn't want people to move to these cities anymore. Mm-hmm. And they want to depopulate some of them, or they want to spread the people out into satellite cities.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So like in Beijing, they're moving them out to a section called Tongzhou. There's a new airport that's just opened in the southwest of the city, which they displaced thousands and thousands of people to build it, but they want to build a new industrial area down there. Mm-hmm. So there's all these complex machinations about not just moving people to the cities, but even within those cities, moving them to different sections to kind of spread out the resources that they have to deliver to everybody. Mm-hmm. And what are the things that you saw in the housing policy or even the physical housing in China that was interesting to you? Like, what did you write about most?
Sure. So based on all, like everything you said was true, like in China, there's the thing called the hukou system, which is basically a government population monitoring and control system, so to speak.
It's like an internal passport.
Yes, exactly. So everyone in China has a registration. You either have agricultural hukou or non-agricultural. So basically rural or urban. But that hukou ties you to your home city. And then
all the services, like schools, services, healthcare,
all of that is tied then to your local city. So people, migrants who move from the provinces into Beijing or other cities have no access to a lot of these benefits then. Like they don't have, their children can't get education there.
They
can't go to the hospital. They can't buy houses. They can't get cars. None of that. So I have seen a lot of this movement of people. And with China's huge development projects now, I mean, you see gentrification all over in the city. And they're revamping all these neighborhoods in the inner cities of Beijing and Shanghai and whatnot. And so everyone's being moved out. All these migrants who have found small homes in the Hutongs and whatnot are now being pushed outside. So it's just been fascinating for me to see how basically like the levels of inequality and just how these migrants who are born into this system and have really no way to change hukou. It's extremely difficult to get your hukou changed in China, if impossible almost. I mean, they have come up with some recent reforms that I can get into later, but yeah, it's just been fascinating for me to see how these people manage, and so many people still choose to move to the cities when faced with all these challenges.
Yeah, it's because it's where the opportunity is.
Theoretically, yes.
Yeah. So what kind of physical housing do you see being built for people in China? You said there wasn't much happening in Rome. It's what you saw was mostly transitional, transient, abandoned spaces, repurposed, somehow just get a roof over people's heads so they can move on out.
Exactly.
But in China, what kind of developments are you seeing and what effect is it having on the urban landscape?
Yeah, so my research is mostly focused on the quality of what they live in right now. So in my interviews with migrants, I've talked about where they lived or where they are living, how they found that, and like the amenities, basically what's provided with that housing, and if their quality of life is really better, if their job is enough to pay for that rent and whatnot. So I wish I had more time here because this topic is just so huge and I only had a little bit of time to look into it. But as far as what housing the government is providing for them or what buildings are being built for them, I have not seen a lot of that. I mean, obviously you go through the city and you can see huge apartment complexes like everywhere, and a lot of them look half abandoned or nearly abandoned. So it seems like there should be plenty of housing for people here. But with more time, I would spend a lot more looking into what, if the government is incorporating housing structures for these people, where my gut and what I've read so far, I would have to say that's not their priority right now, because they already, with hukou, are trying to keep the people out of these big centers. So why would they build houses to support them here if they're trying to move them out.
Yeah, and a lot of the housing is being driven by investment.
Right. I mean, a lot of the development that is going on is commercial or big developers coming in. You know, it's not necessarily for people. It's a lot for the continued overall growth of China.
You can't buy stocks in you can't get your money out of the country easily. There's not a lot of investment vehicles and you don't have real estate investment trusts. So what do? You buy a single apartment in a building,
right,
and that finances the construction of the building, but no one lives in it because it's just a piggy bank.
Exactly. It is. It's all that is, and it's money into it and then developed and moved on.
People can move in eventually, but people have to actually grow into the income strata that they need to be able to pay the rent.
Exactly.
Or whatever.
And what you find with a lot of these migrants moving from the rural areas is they come in, but since they haven't had access to like the urban center education and all this stuff, they're already disadvantaged coming. So all they can really get are low-level jobs. They're economic migrants all over the ladder. So you get some like more economically stable people coming in, but a lot of the people I've been talking to come to the city hoping for better opportunities and land the jobs as a street sweeper, you know, a chef or something. So it's not like it's enough to support themselves, but if they want a nice apartment in the city, like that's just out of the question.
It's so funny that both the situations you described to me seemed like they are efficient in their own way, but they have the wrong purpose. So in China, There's tons of pretty high quality housing being built. These massive apartment blocks, these developments that can support thousands of people. I lived in one that had like 10,000 people in it. It was crazy, right? Yeah. But they're not actually built purpose driven to house a population of migrants entering the city. They're built to be investment vehicles.
Yeah.
In Rome, what you've described is a complete lack of building. Even though they could be some, that would actually generate economic growth,
right,
if they built the housing that was purpose-built. But instead, they're just trying to put a Band-Aid on the movement itself.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. That's a good way to sum it up there.
It's two situations that don't serve the actual needs that exist.
Mm-hmm. There's focus on other things, but it seems like there would be these, not necessarily easy fixes, but just changes that would also help the issue that are just being overlooked or not given priority.
Yeah. So you said this is great research, and you said you wish you had more time. I wish I had more time because I could talk about this kind of thing all day. Yeah. Hence the migration media. So you said you want to come back overseas. Where do you see yourself taking this research you've done? How are you going to incorporate that into what's coming next for you?
Right. I have thought about this. This is a lot of what, once I go back to Chicago, what I will be really wrestling with, I think. I would love to do more on this topic. Like, this is a huge issue in the States and Europe and Asia.
We have a housing crisis in our most developed cities.
We do.
We're not building housing.
Huge, huge housing crisis. So, and I've always been interested in the real estate area, too. So I would really love to kind of combine the humanitarian and the business side of things. I'm not really sure what that looks like yet, but I know if it addresses these points and takes me abroad, like, I'm there.
Just gonna work in housing and be overseas.
I mean, I know the points I want. I just gotta find the right recipe for it.
There's gotta be some country somewhere where they have a housing thing I can study
something
and work
I can
in.
Do. I don't know. I'm pretty flexible right now, but I really like this area of study. I wish I had more time with it, and I love seeing the world, and there's just so much in the world that I can look at, learn about, and then get involved with. Just so many areas that need involvement.
Yeah, it's exciting. Like I said, I'd love to have you back and talk about your research, maybe when it's published, or where you end up, where you finally decide to take yourself after you've finished school. But Alana, I really appreciate you coming in and taking the time to talk to me.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, there you have it. Please check out the show notes for links to more information about my guest and to reach out with questions, feedback, and interview suggestions. Don't forget to subscribe and to leave us a like on your favorite podcatcher. Migratory Patterns is a production of Migration Media and is executive produced by me. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.